Evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. I'm your host, Matt Tardio. Today, we're going to be going over, honestly, an extremely extensive investigation that I've been conducting over, the last week plus. And I was looking into the allegations and statements that were made by Anthony Aguilar the last time he was on the show. Actually, not the last time, the only time he was on the show. We went very in-depth, and we got a lot of things that ended up coming out of that. Ever since that show, there is a lot of things that have been taking place online, behind the scenes. I've been speaking with him. I've been speaking with UGS, and I've been speaking with, we're going to go ahead and call it Israeli Defense Force Public Affairs Office, along with some government officials. I've also, I have also interviewed several people who were on the ground inside Gaza with Mr. Aguilar, along with members of the Israeli Defense Force. Today, we're going to be going over the report that I just released about 2 hours ago. I finally got some food in me. It's kind of nice, you know, I was able to eat. And I'm going to start going over this report with you guys. And I'm going to take this report. I'm going to end up pinning it at the top of the chat so that you guys have it in case you want to reference it. There is a ton of information in this report. And honestly, we're not going to have enough time likely to go over every single chunk of information because I also want to be able to take questions and things like that from you guys. You know, here at the end of the show and do my best to answer questions from you guys as we continue to go through this. You guys are not going to want to be disappointed in this. You guys definitely want to stick around. I'm going to go ahead and pin this report so you guys know where to find it. It's pinned up at the top of the chat. When the video is done, hopefully I remember to be able to take it and share it, you know, down in the comment section of the video as well. So without further ado, as everybody gets here, you guys do have it pinned over there, so you're welcome to take it. You're welcome to read along with it. I'm also streaming this live over on X. If you guys are over there, as soon as I get done over here on YouTube, I'm going to also go into a X space. I'm going to open that up and do my best to be able to take some questions from you guys as well. I do not expect this to be one of the shortest things ever, but let's go ahead and get into this. This is the report. It's pinned over at the top of my X count. There is statements inside of this report from UGS, and I'm currently pending and waiting on a statement from the Israeli Defense Force. I've spoken to their public affairs office, the English-speaking public affairs officer, and I'm waiting to get some information back. And that information is validating a couple things within this article. And so this is the forward that goes into it. All right. And this is very important to make sure that everybody understands. Number one, I didn't take a dime from anybody to make this report. Not one. I left up the other interview that I had with Mr. Aguilar. You guys are more than welcome to go back and reference that. It's up. It's not going anywhere. You're welcome to have it. This investigation was conducted independently and without the knowledge of UG Solutions, Safe Research Solutions, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, or the Israeli Defense Force. Following the completion of my investigation, I contacted UG Solutions and the Israeli government to inform them about the release of this article. This information has been screened by UGS and is currently being screened by the IDF Public Affairs Office, who will be providing a statement on it very shortly, I'm sure. Background information on this. UGS, or UG Solutions, is subcontracted under Safe Research Solutions. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation holds the parent contract over SRS. Thus, both SRS and UGS fall underneath GHF. For the purposes of this article and to help protect the identities of those who came forward, I will refer to all sources as GHF contractors. Before we begin with the results of this investigation, I also need to set the record straight about a statement I made about GHF attorney David Panzer. I said it on my podcast that he had made a false statement and that Mr. Aguilar had, in fact, visited multiple sites. The statement insinuated that Mr. Panzer stated that Aguilar had only visited one site. This was a misunderstanding on my behalf of the statement of Mr. Panzer made on 7/29/25. Mr. Panzer stated the following, quote, "He did not leave the static distribution site during operations and would not have had a line of sight to IDF assets beyond the high berms protecting the sites. Upon further review after the completion of my investigation and in an attempt to be accurate and transparent, I have discovered that this is a true statement, which I misunderstood at the time. A link to the reference video can be viewed here." Now, all of these within the article, ladies and gentlemen, you can actually open up, and it will open up the actual video. So if you want to go over and you want to review the statements that were made,
Mr. Aguilar,
you can find them right over here. All you got to do is go over and then go through it. It'll open up the link. It'll provide you with the source so that you have that. Mr. Aguilar's time in Israel and Gaza with UGS. He was hired at UGS to be a liaison officer or an LNO. His independent contract agreement scope included security operator, medic, and JTOC staff. Mr. Aguilar arrived in Israel in mid to late May and immediately went to work. According to GHF contractor statements, Mr. Aguilar made frequent trips into Gaza as an LNO. Due to the rapid deployment of GHF personnel in Gaza, communications networks were spotty at best for ground personnel between UGS, SRS, and the IDF upon Mr. Aguilar's arrival. Now, a further note that I'm going to go ahead and add into this is that he also, okay, like I've heard this from a couple different people, they did have communications that were up there, but those communications were allegedly through upper levels and not fully disseminated yet down to the lower levels, which is why I'm saying it was spotty, okay? So that is some clarifying information. As an LNO working out of the Joint Tactical Operations Center, also JTOC, in Israel, known as JTOC, Mr. Aguilar made frequent day trips into Gaza. One of his first trips into Gaza was on May 27th to 25. On that day, Mr. Aguilar was at GHF distribution site outside of Rafah, known as SDS-1. It was also the first day any GHF site would be open to distribution to distribute humanitarian aid, and Mr. Aguilar was on it. That day, SDS-1 be overran by an estimated 50,000 Palestinians. Now, a side note on this, something that I was told, I actually did include in the article, so I didn't ask UG Solutions to confirm it, but something that I was told by men on the ground was that they actually did a test run the day before and had issues with that test run. Okay, so it wasn't a full-blown open, so I didn't put that included in the article because there's just way too much information in this thing to go over. This video that I'm about to put up on the screen is a GHF contractor prior to the site opening that morning. Now, that is a very long fence with a heck of a lot of people in it, and they are all excited to go over and get humanitarian aid handed out for the first time, and they were happy. As seen in the video, GHF contractors are standing on top of a dirt berm that overlooks the entry control point, or ECP, of the site. Palestinians are directed into the ECP via a tall fence. There is no wall. There is no razor wire. Simply a dirt berm. But the contractors and the Gazans seem to be excited to get the day started. Shortly after the site opened, the Gazans broke through the outside fences and began to climb over the berms of the site. In this next video, you can hear GHF personnel talking calmly over the radio as distribution appears to continue. There were no gunshots. GHF personnel simply observed and reported. This information was reported back to the JTOC. As you guys can see in this video, I'm about to blow it up on the screen here. There was nothing crazy going on at the time. Everything appeared to have just started to begin to break down. And this is, you know, that first site, first day it was opened. And just as a side note, according to the guys on the ground, this occurred within minutes after it opening up. I don't think I heard anybody state it took longer than 10 minutes for people to start jumping over the wall. So here's another interesting side note that information that I didn't, well, you know what? It's OPSEC, so I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to put that in there. I'm not going to state that. So we're going to go ahead and move on. Let's continue on down a little bit. This situation rapidly escalated. Crowds began to overrun the site through multiple avenues. In the first half of the following video, you can see the fence that led to the ECP, or the entry control point, and it was completely destroyed. In the second half of the video, you can hear warning shots snapping high over the heads of the Gazans. Of note, both the IDF and GHF attempted to fire warning shots that day, or admitted to firing the warning shots that day, according to media publications. The warning shots can be heard in the following video and others from that day. I was not able to locate a video of any civilians being shot on the 27th of May from SDS-1. Further, there is no evidence that anyone was shot. And in fact, not a single soul was shot that day. Not one. Let's go to this video so you guys can take a look at it. And I'll do my best to kind of talk you through it. Right here on this site, when you first see it right here, you can see where this fence used to stand, right? You guys see the fence is completely broken down up over here on this side of the screen. I'll blow it up nice and big. Here's the fence. It's been clearly busted through. That original video taken was likely right up over here on this dirt berm. 50,000 was the low-end estimate for the amount of Gazans that overran the site this day. 50,000. I've heard figures as high as 60,000 from officials on this. As high as 60,000 that overran. And I want you to think about something. 60,000 people overran the site. Nobody was shot. Yeah,
اصبركم قبل نصر
هي
سلام سلام
سلام
سلام سلام
سلام سلام سلام سلام
سلام سلام سلام سلام سلام سلام
سلام سلام سلام سلام سلام سلام سلام سلام
سلام
سلام سلام سلام سلام سلام سلام
سلام
محمد
فارمانا
طول شكل
ايه
الله يسخطه
الله
So I see people in the comments saying that that's BS. I'm going to tell you I heard from multiple sources and not a single one of these people knew that I was talking to the other one. Every single person in this company that I spoke to, to the best of my understanding, according to their contract, they're not allowed to talk to media. They were scared as hell to come out and talk to me. And I want you to think about that. Not a single source that I spoke to knew that I was talking to the other one. And it was actually kind of funny to me because sometimes I would learn that these people were friends. And they're all scared crapless to know that the other one's talking or that they're like they don't want to get found out, right? Not a single person ended up telling me that anybody got shot. Shots were fired into the air. That's it. As a matter of fact, those contractors that day told me, and this is not included in the article, and this is day one, they said, why would we shoot people? And I heard this from multiple sources. Why would we shoot these like people for taking the food that we were just going to hand out anyways? That was what they stated. At one point in time, they did go to clear this humanitarian aid site out. Here's another piece that's not in that article. In the very beginning of this video, if I was to go back and I was to reference this first one, you guys see these dudes in the orange vests? Those are all local nationals that are working to help distribute the humanitarian aid. The local nationals got online and linked their arms and started walking across the site with, and this is when they went to go clear out, with the GH contractors behind them. I've heard multiple accounts of this with some of them like not working. Civilians were getting shoved here and there. But for the most part, it's how it went down. The contractors themselves did not want to shoot anybody that day because of common sense purposes. However, we're going to get into this in a minute. Back in the JTOC, GHF personnel gained contact with the IDF and requested their support. IDF informed GHF personnel in the JTOC that they would not be entering the site to assist. Instead, they would be providing an Apache helicopter and a Merkava tank for a show of force. This is communications from, we're going to call them GHF contractors that are coordinating activity for the IDF with those that are on the ground. As you can see, IDF is not entering. A show of force will be rotary wing and Merkava IDF tank. Crowds see remaining humanitarian aid inside of blue starting to mass on blue gates. Need that show of force. I actually didn't care to go back and confirm this portion of it, but one of the guys told me that he was standing there in the middle of a distribution site and they were over there stealing all of the aid, like in the middle of it, and the contractors had fallen back a little bit, and that they had additional aid that was stacked up in another location inside of the distribution site. And this guy told me, he said basically that, I guess him and this dude's eyes like locked and he was like, crap. And then before that, it was like just like a zombie horde where they all smell, you know, like everything, and they all just start coming in that direction. So they fell back again to another more defensible location. Multiple sources from the ground that day confirmed the following, and it is accurate to the best of my understanding. GHF contractors fell back to a more defensible location within SDS-1 to allow the Gazans to continue to take the humanitarian aid. Apache helicopter did not respond and was never seen. IDF tank arrived at the rear gate of the distribution site. Earlier sources informed me the IDF tank fired a warning shot over the gate into the Mediterranean Sea. This information was proven false by multiple GHF contractors, including Mr. Aguilar. Escalation of force, shooting over a crowd at the blue gate. I'm moving to link up with the IDF. Additional footage was taken that day from an elevated position, and it confirmed two things. Number one, the GHF site was in close proximity to the Mediterranean Sea. Elevated terrain is located to the east of the GHF site and would allow for tanks to safely fire a tank round as described. This aligns with personal testimony from GHF contractors and the Israeli Defense Force. It was likely an option that was not used, which suggests restraint from the IDF and GHF. Interesting. The opening frame of the below video also confirms no visible explosive damage to the GHF site. This video was clearly taken after the entire site had been overran. This also aligns with the personal testimony received and is backed up by communication documented above. Let's take a look at this video. This is the site after it had clearly been overrun. All of this down here that you see, this dust kicked up, 50,000 people. 50,000. That is humans pushing dirt around, running around the site. And again, the opening frame of this video shows a very clear picture all the way around the site. I took that sucker, I blew it up, I zoomed in, I clarified stuff. Not a single piece of damage other than what manpower would do taking it down in order to overrun the site. There was no explosive damage to that site whatsoever. This entire account of the situation is backed up by GHF and IDF personnel familiar with the matter. Documented GHF communications and video evidence available. When Mr. Aguilar and his team returned, they debriefed the JTOC personnel. No one on the ground that day, including Mr. Aguilar, stated anything other than what is written above. UGS also confirms that no one was shot this day despite being overran by 50,000 people. Requesting the tank and helo show of force, and I was debriefed by the entire team afterwards, and no one, including Tony, said the tank shot a car. Simply said, thank you. According to one GHF contractor, I was informed this would be the only time that Mr. Aguilar's time on the ground in Gaza that he was informed an IDF tank was called to assist GHF personnel. That day, the tank did not fire. Due to Mr. Aguilar's observations on the ground in Gaza, such as a lack of physical security measures, he began to suggest to GHF leadership the changes to physical security that he believed needed to be made. Mr. Aguilar was hired as an LNO or JTOC officer, as GHF states. This is a message that confirms to the best of his knowledge that's the only time the IDF was actually called in to assist. In my opinion, Mr. Aguilar's suggestions were likely outside the scope of his contract, despite his background as a Green Beret. Simply put, this wasn't his role, from my understanding. This evidence is substantiated by the signal messages provided by the GHF's attorney, and there is a link to that again on 7/29/2025. It aligns with my understanding of Mr. Aguilar's arguments with GHF leadership. Now, this is what's really interesting, right? When we get into it, right? Like, he is upset over the background. And one of the messages that the attorney provided during that briefing was this one. And it's right up here on the screen, and you can see it's Friday, June 13th. What is interesting about that day? That is the day that GHF said he was fired. UGS claims he's fired on that day. And it says, Dan, I can be of value to the team. You know that. I just retired from 25 years in the Army in March. It's hard to break or even recognize the way I am. The UG team relied on me from the beginning. John C., Nate, and even you thanked me on day one for my part in getting things back on track. I allowed myself to get too attached and deep and lose track of my role. That is very important, and that is a very key piece of evidence. This is what the attorney presented, and it aligns directly with, number one, what I've heard from other contractors, and number two, some of the other things I've heard him say. And there's more. When we get to the bottom of this, I'm going to talk to you guys about evidence that hasn't been released that led me to believe that he was in fact fired. Gaza is an extremely complex, rapidly evolving, and high conflict environment to which GHF was tasked at delivering humanitarian aid to help feed a population of 2.1 million people. This is an unprecedented situation. It's never been done before. Every day that passed without the site's opening was another day that the Gazans did not receive the life-saving support provided by GHF. Time was of the essence, and there was an undeniable call of good enough to start the distribution. The GHF contractors shouldered additional risks to their lives to distribute the humanitarian aid due to the lack of physical security measures. In my opinion, this was honorable and it should be commended. It also shows their commitment to the mission of feeding the people of Gaza. I personally would not have wanted to be the one making that decision because it's a tough call. Risk the lives of your men or risk the lives of civilians. Ultimately, this turned into a learning process for GHF, the IDF, and the Palestinians in Gaza. Now we're going to get in the aftermath of that day because that day set the stage for distribution while Mr. Aguilar was on the ground for the short duration of his employment with UGS. SDS-1 was overran by an estimated 50,000 civilians. I couldn't overstate that enough. It was clear that security measures were not ideal. Both GHF and the IDF underestimated how the civilian population would react. In my opinion, both the IDF and UGS did not have proper countermeasures in place to control it. However, I'm not really sure how you stop 50,000 civilians from overrunning a site like that in a combat zone without causing massive amounts of casualties. And that is a true statement. They were undoubtedly faced with a tough call for a second time. Stop the distribution of aid across all GHF sites until the proper physical security measures could be established, or improve physical security while continuing to provide life-saving aid to the population of Gaza that was on the brink of famine, according to the UN's Famine Review Committee, while the world watched. So that's what they're faced with. Day one, the site opens. It gets overran by 50,000 people. They say, okay, we've got a problem. These people are just going to overrun our camp. We can't just mow them down. We also can't just shut these sites down and stop distributing humanitarian aid, because if we do, people starve to death. So the call is, do we continue to distribute humanitarian aid, risk the lives of our men, and hope that we get in some sort of a rhythm with the civilians, or do we shut everything down and let them starve? Even after my extensive research, knowledge of this conflict, and personal experience in war, I can honestly tell you if the decisions they made that day were right or wrong, and I refuse to be the judge. UGS released two videos from SDS-4 taken on 5/29/2025. From these two videos, we can gather two pieces of evidence. One, additional security measures were added to GHF sites such as battle position berms for armored vehicles. This is a video got taken by Mr. Aguilar from one of those sites. Actually, in the video that they released, you can see him turn around and like kind of do the selfie cam thing in the middle of the video. This right here, for anybody that's been in a mechanized infantry unit, you probably know what this is. This right here is a ramp, right? This is the Israelis doing it, but I want you to look at the size of this thing versus this guy down here on the ground. As a huge ramp. Talk about 20 plus feet where the dirt. Those tracks are not little tracks. You could lay that dude across probably one of those freaking treads. That is a freaking berm made to drive an armored vehicle up on in order to pull security. That's what that is. That was shown in the video that got released. That would be an additional security measure that got in place, likely around these sites. Still waiting on statements from the IDF on this matter. In the above image, you can clearly see the BPB was recently used. This suggests IDF tanks were routinely operating in the vicinity of SDS-4. These videos were released after the accusation of UGS contractor firing warning shots at Gazans who were attempting to approach SDS-4 from a direction that was not approved. In the following video released by UGS, one contractor can be heard stating, "I think you hit one," following 29 shots being fired in close proximity to Mr. Aguilar. I took this video, I threw it into the editing software, I looked at the soundbar, and I counted the spikes along with listening to the video itself. Man fired 29 shots. And it's my opinion that he likely had a P-MAG, and I actually think that Mr. Aguilar stated he remembered the guy and he was carrying P-MAGs. And the old idea, I believe they actually fixed this, like when they were first coming out, there was a gen to where if you topped them all off at 30 rounds, you couldn't properly seat it and the weapon system with the bolt forward because the magazine, the spring in the magazine couldn't depress any further. It was a pain in the butt to jam it in. So dudes were having mags falling out of their rifles, right? So what you do is you strip it down to 29. It means this guy dumped every single round in his freaking rifle. That's what that means. However, the following video reveals something else. The sound of a machine gun outside of the GHF site, which I assess to be that of an FM Mag 7.62, also known as the 240 to NATO forces. These machine guns are mounted to Merkava tanks and were not issued to GHF contractors, to my knowledge. This also aligns with the GHF contractor statement at the beginning of the video that an IDF tank had arrived. When I tell you guys that I put a lot of thought, time, and effort and talked to a lot of people, I wasn't kidding. I want you to listen to this video. In the very opening of this video, you're going to hear the GHF contractor state, all right, I think that he said, like, the tank is arriving. Then I want you to listen to the background. You're going to hear that machine gun.
Hey, got IDF tank posted on the northwest corner now. I brought him in to talk to him. Let's do a show first.
That's a good idea.
They could if we wanted to, but I told them to hold there. I don't want this to be too aggressive.
Yeah.
Just calm them down. But that's an option because they're right there. They were here about 2 minutes.
That might be.
Yeah!
That might be the only option, keeping them fucking back.
Now, Mr. Aguilar told me that he is the one that took this video, and he said from this location that he could see what this guy was shooting at. And I want you to take a look at this video. He told me he could see what this guy was shooting at, and he swears he saw that contractor shoot somebody. And I want you to take a good hard look at his point of view. Take a good hard look at that point of view. You have low ground down off to the left. You have high berms and what appears to be some type of either security screening or a massive pile of trash. And you guys will be able to, like, if we go back and I take this other video, you're going to be able to see it. It is, in fact, there's like a huge freaking scoop that goes down. It's like a giant trash field. My personal belief, just from analyzing this video, is he did not have a direct line of sight. Now, Mr. Aguilar also attests that there is a man in this video that says, I think you hit one. And he said he saw the same thing that guy did. I'm looking from this POV, and I am failing to see how he could have seen that. And if anybody else can see it, you let me know. I will go back, and I will take a look at what it is that you see, because I don't see it. I don't. Videos provided me by Mr. Aguilar also confirm IDF tanks in close proximity, less than 50 meters, to what I believe to be an additional GHF location as well. In response to this video, this video's very public leak, UGS provided the following statement. No Gazans have been shot at by the GHF team, period. The contractor heard in the video encouraging IDF fire was disciplined for this behavior and subsequently fired. Verbal statements from Mr. Aguilar and other GHF contractors confirmed that IDF tanks would at times use coaxial machine guns mounted on their tanks to deny terrain surrounding GHF sites to the tens of thousands of Gazans who would attempt to flank and overrun the distribution sites on an almost daily basis. It was done to prevent such incidences as that which occurred on 527. So, in deeper context, was this justified? Yes, in my opinion. UN's World Food Program was failing to distribute humanitarian aid. UN's Famine Review Committee was growing increasingly concerned at the food crisis in Gaza. Additionally, the World Food Program reported that 92%+ of their HA supplies in transit to distribution sites were stolen between May and June of 2025. In a 6/23/2025 report on Gaza, the World Food Program had stated, World Food Program distributed food to almost 25,000 people, which is the first time in many weeks that food was not directly offloaded from trucks prior to reaching its destination. I want you to take a look at this. These are their numbers. 24,649. That's it. 24,649. Translation, June was an epic failure for the World Food Program with the vast majority of their supplies stolen, likely by Hamas, prior to delivery. GHF was the last hope to get food in the hands of people without the aid being diverted to Hamas. This is the reality of war. Allow mass starvation and possible famine to occur while additional physical security measures are being put in place to protect the sites from 50,000 people overrunning them, or open the gates and attempt to keep order with machine gun fire. Who could balance such numbers? I made tough calls in my military and professional civilian career, but I'm glad I didn't have to make that decision. This situation was described extensively in my interview with Mr. Aguilar, and if you guys are over on X and you see the article, you can click that link right there, and it'll take you over to YouTube where we had this interview. I'm going to play this piece for you.
So,
okay, so Amir took place on day two.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So in day one,
we had been overrun.
In day one, you'd been overrun. And so now there is, I guess, how you would say, like, more of a push to make sure that the crowds are controlled so that doesn't occur again, because it is a huge operational concern.
Are you aware, if you see a dog for the first time and you go to pet it and it bites you, and you know, so the next time you want to come back, you're hesitant because you know that dog bit you.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not going to bite you again, but you already have that experience, so you're kind of like, I'm a little ready for this. So on day two at site number two, everybody, the feeling was this palatable tension of like, is this gonna go down like it did yesterday? So it was only the second day of doing distribution. We were still figuring our stuff out.
Okay. So I told you there's tough questions. I'm going to ask you tough questions. This one came in from a viewer, Smokey Sergeant, I believe is his whole thing. He says, why didn't you clarify that before, that the IDF was not intentionally firing on those civilians, like such as Amir, I guess, in this case?
So one thing to realize in certain interviews with media, that there are parts of interviews that you don't see that are cut out, and then there's some interviews where you don't even get the chance to say it. And I will say this tonight, and I've said it before, I have never said that I felt that the IDF in that situation were shooting at them on purpose. I've never said that.
Okay.
I don't think that there are.
So he just stated right there in that interview that he didn't think they were shooting at them on purpose, and he had never said that. Now pay attention, because he provided me a statement that I placed at the end of this article today. What about Mr. Aguilar's Amir allegation? Mr. Aguilar met Amir on 5/28/2025 at SDS number 2. In his own words, there was a lot of tension. According to Mr. Aguilar, Amir was exiting the site when I was moving in a crowd of people that had to run into the quote-unquote beaten zone of the IDF machine guns. Now, the beaten zone, for those of you who don't know, is essentially like machine guns. They're not freaking sniper rifles, right? They're made to go everywhere, generally get a cone of fire out of them. They dance around, and where those rounds impact, that's the beaten zone, okay? It's just a huge freaking area where the bullets end up splashing down. So, IDF machine guns that were attempting to keep SDS-2 from being overrun. In Mr. Aguilar's own words, this wasn't intentional, nor has he provided any evidence of his death. In an off-camera explanation of the event, Mr. Aguilar believed Amir was hit due to the size and the clothing worn by the individual he claims to have seen laying on the ground. But new information from the Daily Wire suggests that Mr. Aguilar knew that was a lie. Daily Wire allegedly finds Amir's stepmom. On 8/10/2025, a Daily Wire article written by, I was just talking to her yesterday and I almost got her on Cassie Akiva. Ma'am, if I got your name wrong and you're watching, I apologize. I'm tired. I'm sorry. Tagged her in the post so you guys can go find her. It was published in an interview. An interview was conducted with a woman who claims she is, that's the full name. I'm not going to read it. Amir's stepmother. She claims Amir was alive for 2 months after the incident claimed by Mr. Aguilar on 5/28/25. She states that he disappeared on 7/28/2025, that he was not martyred, quote unquote, and she believes he was kidnapped. For reference, Mr. Aguilar's first mentioned Amir on 7/28/2025 in a podcast. Article further states, GHF maintains that no incident involving IDF fire on civilians occurred at their distribution site that day. It adds that even if such an incident had taken place, Aguilar could not have witnessed it, as GHF contractors are prohibited from leaving the secure aid sites, which are set back from the IDF's position. You guys just saw that. Lack a clear line of sight and are separated by physical security, such as sand mounts. Even Mr. Aguilar's Even if Mr. Aguilar's story was true, which it certainly appears not to be, it would have taken place while distributing humanitarian aid in an active combat zone in an area the size of the city of Las Vegas, with an estimated 50 to 20,000 enemy fighters still remaining in Gaza. Unknown number of enemy fighters are in those areas, all while attempting to protect the distribution site from being overrun. Let's get into the IDF tank shooting a civilian vehicle into a crowd, shall we? Let's listen to this statement first.
Forces shooting at the crowds of Palestinians. I witnessed the Israeli Defense Forces firing a main gun tank round from the Merkava tank into a crowd of people, destroying a car of civilians that were simply driving away from the site. I witnessed mortar rounds being fired at the crowds of people to keep them controlled.
As a professional soldier with a very long career, what was your professional opinion of what was happening?
My professional opinion of how the sites were established was what I would describe as amateur. Inexperienced, untrained, no idea of how to conduct operations of this magnitude. That would be my most benign assessment. In my most frank assessment, I would say that they're criminal forces shooting at the crowds.
So, you just heard it in his own words. Now, in the BBC interview, he claimed to have witnessed the Israeli Defense Forces firing a main gun tank round from a Merkava tank into a crowd of people, destroying a car of dot, dot, dot. He hesitated. Civilians that were simply driving away from the site. The statement was clearly retracted during my interview with him on 8/6/2025 after an off-camera conversation we had about intelligence prior to going live. Now, listen to how he describes it.
And when the tank came up into position, it parks. And when the Merkava tank, you know, it's a very big tank. And when he parked, at first it was still sitting high. And then he went into that sit mode, that lower hydraulic, which is usually they're preparing to, you know, potentially, not saying that he initially, I thought that it was, but indicator that, you know, going down onto its level spot, that it's going to shoot its main gun.
Right.
And the gun starts to swivel and the gun turns right towards me. And I can hear you in the video. You can hear me. I'm like, Hey, like I'm here. And right at about that moment, one of the stun grenades goes off and I catch a face full of, tear gas, and I'm coughing and I'm falling to the ground and I'm moving out and I'm behind the berm. Another individual that was on top of the berm, saw the round fire. But that was the incident that the Merkava tank that had pulled up had fired at the white vehicle. And again, my perception of it was that vehicle was people that were leaving. But as Matt had brought it to me, you're right. I didn't hear IDF communications on the radios in terms of what intelligence there was or what that potential threat could have been.
So this is a fair statement that, like, something that I always bring up and I always talk to the viewers about is intelligence ends up driving operations. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, I love it when I have a video of myself up there. Well, you just heard his own personal account of the situation. Intelligence drives operations, especially against terrorists hiding among civilians. Simply put, Mr. Aguilar did not know the combatant or civilian status of who is inside of that vehicle that he claims the IDF shot. I have not obtained a statement from the IDF about this incident. I have, however, interviewed IDF soldiers who attest that they were constantly receiving intelligence about Hamas and protecting GHF personnel. Mr. Aguilar allegedly quitting UGS on 6/12/25. This is where it gets juicy. In order to tell this story correctly, we'll start back on May 30th of 25. I received the below screenshot featuring Amir from a GHF contractor saying that Mr. Aguilar actually quit on May 30th of 25. But Mr. Aguilar backed out of it the next day and continued to work. At the time, I was not able to see through the message above the screenshot to corroborate the statement, though I believed it to be true. The below message was presented to Mr. Aguilar live on the Speak the Truth podcast on 8/6/2025. He was asked to explain it. It is my personal belief and opinion, based on our interactions both on and off camera, that Mr. Aguilar knowingly lied to me during this interview for unknown reasons. Now, interesting side note about this screenshot. Originally, this contractor had provided this to me to go, look, if he really cared about Amir, if it, you know, like talking about Amir, why does this exist? And I said, that's interesting. Why does it sound like he's quitting, basically? And he goes, oh, yeah, you know, and then we started talking about that. I wasn't able to get the screenshot of this right away. I don't know if this is something that's floating around over there or what it is. But that was the discussion we had. He quit on the 30th. So I asked him about it. Mr. Aguilar stated that he had been offered a promotion around 529. I asked him about this live on the air. You guys remember if you were there. I put it up on the screen and I put it up there. He stated that he'd been offered a promotion around 529.25. According to Mr. Aguilar, this was a goodbye message to the group he worked with early on in Israel because his promotion would move him to another location. I'm going to go ahead and let you guys, I'm just going to let him do it. But he also told me off camera about it. I even retracted my statement about him quitting on the 30th of May because of the excuse that he had told me off camera. Here it is. This is on camera, obviously. Is that fair?
That's fair. Yes. Thank you.
I need, in order to fairly make that assessment, I need an additional chunk of proof. And the reason I need that additional chunk of proof, we're going to go ahead and put that up on the screen right here. I'm going to put it up on the screen for the folks at home so they can see it. You guys blow that up nice and big. You guys can see that. This is what we are about to go over. What it says is Anthony Aguilar saying, I am 100% serious. These names are redacted for security purposes. I'm going to go ahead and do that. And it says, you know, you've got pictures of one Amir that's down here in the bottom right of the photograph. And it says, wants everything his way on his schedule at his beck and call. And UGs underwrite that and allow it. My advice, keep your heads down. Stay safe. You all have my number. Please stay in touch. This was truly, truly, truly been a great experience. I'm very grateful. Sir, the floor is yours.
So, on May 27th, the guy that was the kind of the second in charge of the overall contract, the 2IC, if you will, he resigned in protest over some things that he felt were just substandard. Things that I felt as well, lack of a standard operating procedure, lack of rules of engagement and a escalation of force. And for him at that point, because what we all experienced on the 26th on site one, when we were overwhelmed by thousands of civilians that were racing to get food, he felt that there were too many things to fix that we couldn't just keep doing it. So he resigned. That was on the 27th. So through the 28th, we kind of went through this vacuum of leadership. I was still in my position as the joint tactical operations and operations team leader. And on the 29th, the actual guy in charge of the whole contract, he approached me and asked if I would like to step into that position as the assistant country team leader. And I told him that I would need a day to think on it. You know, the position and leadership, but it was more of a personality conflict. We didn't necessarily get along. Difference of backgrounds, difference of experiences, and didn't really mesh well. But I felt that if he wants me to be in that position, that you know, I can give my leadership to that position. So in the role that I was in currently as the joint tactical operations and operations team leader, I had a team of six. So there were seven of us. And that's where you see the Beersheba seven, because we were my operations team and I, we were separate from the majority of the contract teams that were in Ashdod and Ashkelon to the north. We were in Beersheba, so we were closer to the headquarters of the IDF Southern Command. And you know, I had really gotten close with those guys in the few days we've been working there, long days, and had a lot of respect for those guys. One was a Green Beret, former Green Beret. Another guy was a Navy veteran. All of them on our team were military veterans. And just a great group of guys. And so I told him that, hey, you know, I got offered this job. And that's where you see the responses like, oh, are you serious? Because they couldn't believe that the guy in charge would want me to be his second, because we didn't always see eye to eye on things. So they were like, oh, are you serious? And I'm like, yeah, I'm serious. I'm going to do it. And so the reason I was, you know, kind of given that farewell is because I was going to be moving from Beersheba all the way to Ashdod. So pretty much.
So that's a very interesting take. That's what he ends up claiming. It was because he was moving from Beersheba to Ashdod. The following day, I received the text or the messages located just above his statement. Mr. Aguilar sent a much longer message at 9:30 p.m. Actually, to be fair, he edited it at 9:30 p.m. For personal identifying information security, I will provide you with a redacted transcript. It's very long, and to be truthful, I don't feel like reading it all. But I gotta do it. Redacted was flipping out this morning because he wanted enough stun grenades for every operator to have five on the objective, i.e. SDS-1. There aren't even that many stun grenades in country for one, but two, it isn't needed. Anyway, Redacted came to the jock this morning yelling at Redacted, telling him to F off in front of his entire staff, then got in my face, told me to F off, then Redacted and Redacted came in and told me to F off that I don't know what I'm doing and I have no experience. So I'm overseeing this plan from the jock. Then I'm driving to Beersheba to secure my stuff, then to Tel Aviv to fly home. I can put up a lot, but getting in my face and telling me to F off is my limit, I guess. With the paycheck that hit, I made enough to buy my ticket home, and I have a little to treat to the wife and kids to a nice vacation. I wasn't here for the money anyways. I believed in the mission, and to be honest, it's going well. Go ahead and highlight that statement. I believed in the mission, and to be honest, it's going well. I believe Redacted has serious cognitive and mental health issues. By the way, I confirmed 100% this was him that made this statement. Just FYI, in case any doubt in your mind, this is confirmed. It will stand in a court of law. This was his message. I believed in the mission, and to be honest, it's going well. I believe Redacted has serious cognitive and mental health issues. He is unstable as a human. If UG is going to continue to underwrite that, this is not the place for me. I told Redacted that either Redacted moves to a different position if they want me in this assistant country team position or send me back to the jock role, or I am politely removing myself from this toxic environment. I served in the Army for 25 years as an infantry officer, special forces officer, JSOC, etc. Without a question of a doubt, this is the most toxic environment I've ever been in. I can do it, but I will not. I believe in the mission. The men here are doing great. Maybe Redacted and Redacted are right. I just don't have the requisite experience for this line of work. Godspeed, gentlemen. Redacted, if I don't see you before I fly out, I'll record some bedtime stories for you. Good luck. You will need it. See you on the flip side. Tony, a.k.a. Anthony Aguilar. It is clear to me that there was a very large incident that took place on that day, and undoubtedly, reading that text message would have jogged his memory of said incident for why it was there. He was given an opportunity to state why that message existed, and he chose to give a very long explanation of why it existed. The following day, the day following the interview, I confronted Mr. Aguilar with this information. He stated that he originally sent the above message to the group chat for fellow contractors, but he did not inform his leadership of his decision to quit that night. He claims he changed his mind the following morning and stayed with UGS, so he never formally quit. I then informed Mr. Aguilar that he clearly lied to me on air, and I will always do my best to report the truth. I then asked him, which I am doing now, I then asked him about the document he presented as proof of quitting on 6/12/25. And for Mr. Aguilar, I received several messages sent by him via Signal. Ladies and gentlemen, I was able to verify these messages were in fact his via his Signal safety number. For security reasons, I'm not going to tell you how I did it, but I promise you in a court of law, it is going to stand firm. And that these messages also haven't been publicly released. This is brand new information. This is not what GHF has put out. This is not what anybody has put out. This is brand new information that was brought forward to me by a source. I further informed him that these messages show in his own words that he was in fact terminated by UGS. That was after the 13th. After the 13th, in his own words, he was terminated. I verified it. I promise you it'll stand in a court of law. Try me. These facts that I know to be true, backup statements made by UGF as well, that he was fired. I also needed him to explain why he has a document allegedly drafted on 6/12/2025 quitting UGS. He continued to talk in circles until I was eventually offered the below explanation. Here it is. This is not a direct quote of Mr. Aguilar, but rather a summary of our conversation to the best of my recollection. In early June, he no longer wanted to work for UGS due to confrontations with leadership, how the aid delivery mission was being handled, and other issues. Mr. Aguilar believed in the mission of GHF and wanted to continue to work for the Gaza, work in Gaza, feeding the Palestinians. On or about June 12th, Mr. Aguilar went to a senior leader in SRS, which would be UGS's parent contract holder. GHF is the giant parent contract holder above SRS. And he attempted to get a contract where he'd be overseeing UGS operations. The leader from SRS told Mr. Aguilar SRS cannot hire him as long as he works for UGS. However, the SRS leader wanted Mr. Aguilar to continue to work at UGS until such a position becomes available. Mr. Aguilar then drafted a letter and gave it to SRS so when the position opened, they could have a smooth transition. On the morning of June 13th, he was confronted by a senior leader in UGS who fired him. A physical altercation had ensued and Mr. Aguilar's phone was broken. He was debriefed and placed in a hotel in Israel before he finally left Israel several days later. That's what Mr. Aguilar told me. In a nutshell, that's what he told me. That he tried to get a different contract at the parent company. That person from SRS told him to fill out that document and turn it in, or he did it on his own accord, one or the other. And so he did, and the next day he got confronted, got in a physical altercation, his phone's broken, and he's fired. UGS Solutions explanation. This is quite literally a statement they gave me on that, on this particular matter that we're talking to. Mr. Aguilar was fired on 6/13/2025. The altercation did take place, but Mr. Aguilar was not struck by the UGS leader who pushed away a phone Mr. Aguilar was shoving in his face after Mr. Aguilar was refusing to comply with directives from a superior related to the safety of other personnel. Further, SRS has no record of Mr. Aguilar emailing a copy of his resignation letter to SRS, and SRS leadership did not offer him a position with the company. These actions would be against SRS and UGS contractual agreement. While the company had the right under its contract to demand that Mr. Aguilar pay for his own way home, the company paid for Mr. Aguilar to remain safely in a hotel in Israel until such a time he could return home to the United States. This is when the Iran situation kicked off and ballistic missiles were flying. They didn't include that last statement. The company's generosity in this regard was one thing that Mr. Aguilar pointed to as evidence of his fabricated claim that he was not actually fired. Through July 4th of 25, Mr. Aguilar continued to beg for his job back and threatened to damage the company if he was not reinstated, and he carried out such threats by making demonstrably false accusations, several of which the company debunked on July 29, 2025, after Mr. Aguilar's lies were debunked. Numerous media outlets, including Mr. Tardio's own podcast, repeated and amplified his false claims. And I will tell you this right now. Obviously, that's the end of their statement. Something else that I did not include in this article, I also have evidence that is verifiable and would stand up in court that he told other individuals the same type of things that UGS claimed. That he was threatening the company, that he basically had a grudge. It's clear in black and white. And again, it's his own messages verified. That will stand up in a court of law. His signal safety number doesn't change. And I verified it. It's him. I have statements verified that he made after he was fired that I have yet to publicly release. Mind my words there. In his own words that I have verified. that not only was he terminated, but he was pissed at the company, for lack of better terms, right now. What was true? Some of the events that Mr. Aguilar stated publicly are true, but many were not. GHF was entirely accurate in its July 29, 2025 rebuttal of Mr. Aguilar's false statements. I regret accusing GHF of a CYA or making false statements in that July 29 rebuttal, all based on incomplete information and lies that I have been told, which were uncovered during this extensive investigation. I hope this statement serves as a lesson to mainstream media outlets of properly owning up to their mistakes with integrity, like men and women. The IDF admitted to directing artillery fire near GHF distribution sites and mistakenly taking the lives of civilians. That is true. It's another true statement he made. Here's a link to a Times of Israel article that verifies. I've gone over it on the podcast back when it happened. This has been well documented. Additionally, as a fellow Green Beret and prior infantryman, I can also attest that from the initial imagery and videos which emerged from the GHF sites, I too felt as if physical security was lacking. While this may be taking the entire situation into context, the starving population, wartime environment, and so on and so forth, I would be hard-pressed to state that I would have made a different decision. Statement given to me by Mr. Aguilar today. I hold the personal belief that were preventable situations created by GHF and IDF leadership failures that led to the loss of civilian lives. The men on the ground of GHF who are distributing aid in Gaza will always have my utmost respect for the personal sacrifices they're doing to feed the starving people of Gaza. Now let's talk about GHF contractor sworn statements as we get into this. GHF provided sworn statements from several of its contractors. Here's a brief example. Quote, from my brief time being around him, I would never have guessed he was a retired U.S. Army Special Forces Green Beret. End quote. Another quote, he did not perform his duties at JTOC, okay? He did not perform his duties at JTOC North, failed to monitor answer the radio during split team mobility operations where the team was trying to contact JTOC North to relay their status and situations on the ground. That's something, in my opinion, that is freaking inexcusable. If you're supposed to be operating the radio and men on the other end can't get a hold of you, people can die. Here's a link for those of you that are interested. You can read these statements for yourself in that link. Of note, I made damn sure I put this in here. The Special Forces and Ranger communities pride themselves on peer reviews. These are conducted extensively throughout the training and selection processes. If your peers constantly rate you as substandard, you are dropped from training, or in very rare cases, you're recycled if you're lucky. Statement by UGS. UGS appreciate Mr. Tardio's tenacity in following up on the lies told by Mr. Aguilar, even after Mr. Tardio shared many of them on his podcast. UGS put forth uncontroverted evidence that Mr. Aguilar's media tour was a calculated attempt to harm UGS simply because the company would not put him back to work in Gaza, a role for which Mr. Aguilar was not suited. Mr. Aguilar was fired on June 13th, and I will vouch for that, among other things. Lack of performance. He responded by falsely accusing other contractors of assault. Mr. Aguilar could have been sent back to the U.S. on his own expense, but the company covered his lodging, travel, and paid him until he returned home. Following his termination on June 13th, Mr. Aguilar raised the first time a number of operational concerns. The company conducted an investigation of these issues, including an interview of Mr. Aguilar related to these alleged concerns. Mr. Aguilar lied to the company's lawyers during this interview, impeding the company's ability to address any potential relevant concerns. But in any event, as the company has been focused on continuous improvement, no items identified by Mr. Aguilar reflected the current status on the ground. Before the company even had an opportunity to follow up with Mr. Aguilar regarding his interview, Mr. Aguilar began his ill-advised press tour in which he told a series of lies, all of which have now unraveled. Most concerningly, Mr. Aguilar told a lie about the death of a child called Amir, and then, when caught in that lie, amplified the lie on media. Despite the truth coming out, Mr. Aguilar failed to take his opportunity to admit that the child was not killed, and that he knew it at the time that he said otherwise. While Mr. Aguilar did not retract his claim that the IDF was intentionally shooting at civilians, including firing tank rounds, artillery rounds, and mortar rounds into crowds, he has not withdrawn other false statements that GHF was involved in war crimes. So again, while he did retract his claim that the IDF was intentionally shooting at civilians, including firing tank rounds, artillery rounds, and mortar rounds into crowds, he has not withdrawn other false statements that GHF was involved in war crimes, that anybody lobbed stun grenades into a crowd and killed a civilian, and that he witnessed brutality and use of indiscriminate and necessary force against a civilian population, an unarmed, starving population. All of this was made up as part of Mr. Aguilar's documented plan to damage UGS because we would not rehire him after he was fired. I also, before I continue on with their statement, do believe I have evidence that also suggests that. Again, not public, and it will stand up in a court of law. After having caught Mr. Aguilar in each of the lies, he has told the media there is no reason to give any credence to Mr. Aguilar's stated personal belief that preventable situations led to the loss of civilian lives. To the contrary, every day, GHF is saving lives under adverse circumstances. And again, under this freaking investigation, I would also vouch for that statement. Every single day, GHF is saving lives under adverse circumstances. Continuing on, UGS hopes that others in the media are quick to retract their false statements promoting Mr. Aguilar's lies, as they were to amplify Mr. Aguilar's lies to begin with. UGS looks forward to moving beyond this distraction so it can remain focused on its important work in delivering aid to those in Gaza. And UGS hopes that Mr. Aguilar can obtain the help he needs in transitioning to the workforce after his military service. Note that I ended up putting at the bottom. As a former infantryman, Green Beret, law enforcement officer, I had to deep dive into my collective experience to understand and properly report the complexity of this environment and report what I believe to be the truth. There are no winners in war, only those that survive it. I sincerely hope this report serves as a lesson to all mainstream media outlets who fail to conduct a detailed investigation in conjunction with those who hold an in-depth understanding of the complexities of war before sparking international outrage. People can handle the truth. This is a perfect example of the real world that most people in Western society are protected from. I wrote the above article in good faith based on the preponderance of the evidence from which or to which I know and believe to be true and accurate. That's it. That's the story, ladies and gentlemen. That's what you've been waiting on. That's what it was all for. That's what took forever. That's what I've been doing. Holy frickin' hell. I'm going to go through some of your guys' questions that have undoubtedly been stacking up. You have to forgive me. I had to get all that stuff out before we went on. Smokey Sergeant says, sorry, meant you were a good cop. Smokey Sergeant says, Matt, you've been doing well being the bad cop. I would be more happy to be the bad. I see what you're saying there, bud. Thank you. His perception, he did not think to verify before deciding to talk out of his butt. And broadcast his unverified perception on national media. That's how we get painted as murderers. That came from Smokey Sergeant. Michael Nickerson, member of 15 months, like watching John Kerry. Danny Goland says he was talking about the coax and how inaccurate it is. The Merkava has two M240s, one coax, and the next to the hatch for the commander to use manually. Correct. Cletus, hell yeah, Matt. Smokey Sergeant, nice tracking. Michael A. Mayo, Lebanon 83, they told the Marines to remove the berms because it made them look like the U.S. was going to stay there permanently. Yeah. Banana Gang, Linda Liu, always in the house. Michael Mayo, raise your nanner if Matt is someone you'd immediately identify as scary and probably not worth the mugging. I don't know. Beth Ann, gifting out Speak the Truth membership. Bo William came in, gifting out 10. Cletus just breaching, hell yeah, Matt. So I want to do something a little bit different because I don't even know how many people I'd have to look at my profile I have over here. We got about 1,500 people tuning in over on Twitter right now. So what I want to do is I want to open up a Twitter space. I've never tried this before during a live session. I think I can actually do it because I'm broadcasting through this way. So more, create a space. Anyone. Let's see here. Yeah. Why not? Let's just go ahead. It's not letting me identify the title of it. So let's just go ahead and create your space. I guess it's just going to go right off of that. We're going to go ahead and record it and send it. So right now what I'm going to do is, if you guys are up over on Twitter, and you guys should be able to hear it broadcasted, and you'll see people jumping over here in this space in just a second. Like I said, I've got, 1,500-ish, 1,400 people tuning into this live show over on X. I opened up a space, ladies and gentlemen. You're welcome to go jump in that space. Raise your hand if you want to come up on the stage. I want to take your guys' questions. Normally, I do this inside of the Discord for our true supporters. In my opinion, this is one of those more special situations. And I want you guys to be able to come in here and ask questions. So if you guys have questions about this, if there's anything that I can clarify, I'm going to be in here for a couple minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're over on YouTube and you want to jump over to Twitter and ask me questions, you're more than welcome to. Jasmine Rose, I see you in the house. Everybody's slowly jumping in here. Wouldn't let me adjust the title because of what I got going on. But I've got the video going and I have this. And I think they're both actually up and working right now. I don't think it actually killed my stream. Now they're both up. So go ahead, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to slow roll in here. You guys are going to watch it. Notifications are going to get pushed out. Nate Vance, I'm also curious to hear from you if you want to jump in. Very curious to hear what you have to say, sir, if you want to raise your hand. Any of you guys else that want to jump up, just go click the little freaking mic button and you're welcome to come up here and we'll take your statements. Long story short, what did I end up learning from all of this as I'm waiting on people to slowly roll in here? Well, what I ended up learning from all of this is probably one of the most complex situations I ever had to deal with in my freaking life, like going over all of this crap. It really was. Hopefully you guys over on YouTube can hear Mr. Vance. Nate, how are you today, sir?
No, I'm doing all right. I really don't have much to comment. I was just going to say, how dare you talk about machine gun terminology without clearing it with me first?
I was sitting there and I'm like, Nate's head's going to explode, man. I know Nate, and Nate's head's going to explode. That's what I'm going to start talking and Nate's head's going to explode, man. But like, I was like, how do you like verbally explain a beaten zone versus a cone of fire without a graphic? And I should have had that up and running. You know what I mean? That's what I should have done.
No, yeah, the visual light always helps. But anyway, I'm just teasing. I'm not trying to like really interject on the conversation, but I was just making a joke about that. But yeah, my machine gunnertism definitely comes out as soon as I hear somebody say like beaten zone or, you know, cone of fire, things like that. Grazing fire is a big one. But anyway, yeah, I'm just screwing around. I'll let other people talk. But that was basically.
I'm very curious, Nate. How do you like? Have you tuned in for this whole thing?
Not the whole thing. I mean, it's been a lot with the Aguilar situation, but
right.
I don't think I've got 100% of it. But
you got a pretty good handle on it.
Did you have a specific question?
No, I was just curious of your opinion on the information presented. If it was clear, how you felt about it. I did my best to paint a very clear operational picture throughout that entire report so that people understood the gravity of what was taking place on the ground so that they could understand the complexities. I, for the life of me, can't think of a way to expeditiously set up a defendable location like that. And, you know, with everything on the ground in Gaza and after doing the research on it, after understanding the situation on the ground, it makes sense to me why those sites were set up the way they were and why they, you know, made the decisions that they did. To open those sites with minimum security measures in place.
Yeah, look, the situation is kind of unprecedented. You know what I mean? Like handing out food is not unprecedented, but handing out food in the middle of a region that's like embroiled actually in an active, like an asymmetric kind of conflict, right, is very weird. And you have ununiformed combatants running around doing things, and it's a very weird situation to be doing that. And keeping it secure is also very, you know, very difficult. It's very difficult. So to come in and say, well, it was handled unprofessionally, like it's hard to do things for the first time perfectly the first time.
Yeah.
You know, like what other things have been done without, you know, breaking a few eggs?
Well, and so, that was something I stated, man. It's an unprecedented situation. It's honestly never been done before, especially to that extent. How do you criticize that? With the humanitarian crisis going on and all that other crap. And you're the one that's tasked to get this food out there. How do you properly handle that situation?
When you just roll in there, you're going to make mistakes.
Right.
Right. You're going to make tactical errors. You're going to realize, oh shit, we need to shore this up over here. And you're going to realize those things in real time and then fix them in real time. I mean, there's no way to like pre-plan for something you've never planned before. When we do military planning, it's all based on previous experiences. That's how we get like a 5-paragraph order. And that didn't just happen the first time somebody went into combat.
Yeah.
That was developed over hundreds of years of, you know, of the U.S. military doing those things.
Right.
So it's not something that you just roll into the first time and do it perfectly right away. It's just going to be mistakes. But it's pretty clear to me, it sounds like there was a personality conflict somewhere. Somebody got mad. Somebody started running their mouth, pissed a bunch of other people off, and then they got let go and they got butthurt about it. And now they're
right
lashing out because they don't want it to damage their reputation. And in doing so, my opinion is that in doing so, it damages reputation more.
Yeah.
Like, you know, sometimes you screw up, you make a mistake, you get fired. You just say, well, you know what? Hey, I screwed up. My bad. And then that's not that big a deal. But when you do this kind of thing and you try to lash out.
Well, back, I mean,
if that's what happened, you know what I mean? Like I wasn't there. I don't have a videotape of what happened. So, but that's what it seems like.
Yeah. And the best I can do is what I did.
Yeah.
Took the most information, talked to as many people as humanly possible, came up with a storyline, which again, I got told basically that they were shocked of how freaking accurate it was of what actually took place, you know? So, there's that. Jenny, yes, ma'am. You have your hand raised.
Hi, thank you. Yeah. So I just want to tell you, you laid it out. I have zero military experience. It was incredibly easy to understand even for me. So thank you, for laying it out so well. I'm curious about the podcast that I missed that caused all the uproar. Were you initially planning to just do that, or did more information come out in the process of doing that podcast that sparked you to do this deeper dive?
I'm going to go ahead and decline to comment on that. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I'm going to decline to comment on that. There was a little bit of both.
Okay.
We'll say for maybe lack of better terms, but yeah, I mean, obviously every day goes by, you continue to gather new information. There's also other key things that I was looking for within it. And I'm just going to kind of leave it at that.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Of course. Yeah. I understand that it was a little bit dry. But I actually went to that entire report, looking at it from almost like a law enforcement perspective of what do the facts say? What do I have? What's verifiable? How many people are going to, you know, what actually like substantiates itself? You know, one thing within itself, I don't necessarily look at it unless it's a very damning piece of evidence, right? Is like substantiating. I want multiple substantiating pieces of evidence to kind of tie everything together. Danny, what's up, brother?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I saw him on some other interviews. He was talking a lot of shit on IDF. Especially the reservists. I gotta say that honestly, the reservists have way more experience than active duty soldiers. They've been in Gaza before, Lebanon, especially combat. You did a lot of training during the year, every year, and he said that they did very little training before going in. So that's not true. From first-hand experience, it was at least a month before going in. Usually, they basically took the positions up north of the active duty soldiers. They went in, and then they were trained meanwhile, and then they went in. So, okay. Just clarify that.
Yeah. Night vision? Do you find most of the soldiers on the ground in Gaza to have night vision?
I mean, and infantry, no, like tier two, soft, yeah, and I mean tanks, APCs, yeah,
of course.
Night vision. So there is no way the tank was shooting at night. Like you have night vision,
right?
Plus the thing that he said, the tank. Remember, I asked the question. I'm like, how far was the tank from the white vehicle? And he said around 500 meters.
Correct.
You do not shoot a tank round at 500 meters. That's a like $10,000 tank round, and you got a 50 cal. which will take that vehicle out.
Yeah, I also I heard a. Well, I'm gonna stop, but I heard a different distance at that. That was a lot less at one point in time.
Yeah, I mean, tank trailers were like a kilometer plus.
Right. Yeah, and we'll talk about, you know, when a tank fires in that near vicinity to you and what that actually does to your brain as well. If any of you guys have ever been close to a tank shooting its main gun, it does not feel good.
Nope.
Nate, you ever had a tank go off right next to your freaking head?
Yeah, I had one. I had one stick the muzzle of it over my hole and shoot, and I thought I was going to die. So it's terrifying. It's like a bomb going off. It's like a bomb going off over your face. It's not good. But the other thing that happens, like, you know, you said over a kilometer, that 50 cal with a crow system, you can reach out to 2K easy, right? So something like a Hilux, there's no reason to shoot a main gun round at a vehicle. There's really no reason.
Yeah, and you're limited. I mean, you have I think 20.
Well, let's not talk about 30. How many tank rounds they were going to carry.
It's public information, but they're also different rounds, right? So you're not gonna waste like an anti-tank round on like a little Toyota or whatever.
Yeah, correct. I mean, a 50 cal would make short work of that vehicle. It really would. From 500 meters, 50 cal really would, especially coming from the tank. And if it's on an RWS, 100%. And I'm pretty sure an RWS for this remote weapon system, it's extremely accurate. Extremely, extremely accurate. Right. Jenny, is your hand still raised? Do you still have another question?
No, I don't.
No.
I can go down to listener if you need space.
No, I mean, I don't need space right now. I'm actually very exhausted. And honestly, my brain needs a break after doing all this, guys. Me and everybody else that I was working with on this, and I put it out when I dropped the article, and I said, I really appreciate everybody's time that was working on this, because we 1000% for the last week and a half feels like haven't really been sleeping, just day in, day out. Some people were home on vacation, supposed to be spending their time with their families, that we're not doing that, from over there. And
I just want to say it's really important that you did what you did. So, because this guy caused an international incident, I've seen disgruntled workers, but he took it to another level, and the damage that he caused with his lies was just exponential. And what you and anybody who helped you do this, I mean, you guys deserve a Pulitzer. It was incredible.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, it's not even like that damage, right? Reputational damage and stuff like that. Do I think that the company, based on my investigation, has the right to sue the brakes, like just sue the pants off them? Yeah. I think they have that right. Time's going to tell if they choose to do that. I think, honestly, the company really does wish him the best. But here's the sad part, is that that information, had it not been corrected, risks the lives of people on a daily basis due to inflammatory statements. When you lie about people committing war crimes, tanks shooting cars of civilians, and that information gets out, and you continue to state things like that, that puts the lives of Americans at risk by inspiring terrorist attacks. That's what it does. Not just here, the EU, over inside Israel, inside Gaza. You know, if people actually bought into that crap in Gaza, you know, thank God they didn't. Those people wouldn't be lining up at like HA sites if the IDF and the contractors were just out there mowing them down with machine guns on a daily basis. They wouldn't. No. Even the Nazis lied to the Jews to get them into the gas chambers, told them they were going to go take showers, you know? Like, for the love of God, man. It's insanity. Not to mention, where are all these bodies going? God, man. Cletus, what's up, buddy?
Hey, I just, like I told you the other night, I just want to say God bless for what you're doing, because there are a lot of accounts on this shitty app that are constantly posting lies about what's going on over there. And there's a couple in particular I've had run-ins that are been pushing this story so hard, and their simps are believing it. But there are actually some who have DM'd me. I've DM'd them and said, look, just listen to you. Watch the interview you did last week and be objective and open-minded. And look at this guy, the way he's done his interview. It's like he changes every interview. So God bless you for what you're doing, because like Jenny said, this can cause a lot of problems in the region and in the rest of the world, especially Europe. So I just want to say good job to you, buddy.
I appreciate you, man. Thanks for the super chat over on YouTube, by the way. That was you, right? Yeah, I appreciate you.
Yeah.
I appreciate you. Love the...
have a good night now.
Yeah, love the profile picture you got going on, by the way. Praise hell. Nate, what's up, man?
Well, you know, look, this may sound morbid, but like, you know, Matt, you and I have been to a shooting range together, right?
Yeah.
And when you think about these contractors that are out there, right, all of them are pretty highly qualified people, right? You know, like they're not entry level
for the most part
weapons handlers, right?
I will tell you for the most part. Yep.
Yeah. There might be some of these slips through the cracks or whatever, but like, you know, between you and I, if we put our sights on somebody and you're in range, we're going to hit you. Right. Like it's pretty much, you know, and you get a team of people like this. Now, if they're really out there, basically unsupervised, just running around like cowboys shooting whoever they wanted, you know how many people would be dead by now?
Oh, yeah.
Right. It's ridiculous. Right. It's ridiculous to think that these guys aren't very well restrained. And I agree with you. Like, I'm the same way. I don't want to go over there to shoot people who are just trying to get food. No. Nobody does. Nobody wants to do that. That's stupid. No. You know what I mean? And people want to go home to their families, not worry about prison, not kill people unjustly, and just do their job and go home.
Right. And did you hear what I said the contractors actually stated that I interviewed? I didn't include it in the article. When it got overran on day one, they were all like, why are we going to shoot people that are just taking the food that we're going to give them anyways? Like, granted, they're trashing the place, but why would we beat the hell out of them?
Yeah, just let them take the food. Why would you? Yeah, you just like, all right, take the food.
And you know what? I'm going to share this other statement that I got from a guy that day as well, because I think it's very powerful and impactful. When they did get ordered to go retake the site, like I said, they fell back for a while, but you got to take it back at some point, right? Because you got to establish ground rules. That's a fact. So they had to go reestablish ground rules. And he asked me, Matt, have you ever seen the series of Band of Brothers? And I was like, yeah, of course, man. And he said, have you, I don't know who's, hey, who, N, mute yourself, please.
Yeah, no, I'm here.
Yeah, you got to mute yourself, man. You're killing me with your, you sounds like you're chewing on your microphone.
No, I'm.
All right. So I'll just gonna mute him. Okay. So, he said it sounded like, he said it reminded him of the series of Band of Brothers. And he said there was the scene when Easy Company had liberated the camp that was filled with all the Jews, concentration camp. And he said when the soldiers were ordered to put them back inside, that is how he felt inside. When they got ordered to put them back in because the feeding or whatever would kill them and they had to like control them and all this other crap and the people were... So that's what he like to humanize these men. I think that is one of the most accurate things I ever heard. Like that he had that same feeling that you could get just by watching the show of Band of Brothers by having to put those, like having to basically kick those people out to camp. That says something, man, that's what he was going through it, like internally in his soul that he had to go through that. That sucks, man. I didn't like that at all. That's just humanizing. What's up, Nate?
No, it does suck. I mean, look, you know, regardless of however you feel or whatever side of the fence you're on when it comes to the, you know, Palestinian-Israeli conflict, there are people in, you know, in Gaza that are just, you know, there are people that are just innocent victims and they're hungry, right? Like, and as a human being, you feel bad for those people because they probably didn't ask for any of this, especially kids, right? When you see young kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those guys standing there, I know that they kind of, you know, I don't know if it's media or movies or whatever, but when you see a guy standing there geared up with a weapon, you think of him as like a robot, and it's not. That's a human being in there. Right. That human being may have kids, they have families, they, you know, they're normal. They're just people. They're not robots. They're not machines. So yeah, going and seeing all that, like, kind of human tragedy, it's not easy to do. So, and they're not just all trigger happy maniacs. You know what I mean? That's not how it works. And most of the time when you get somebody that is like that, it gets dealt with very, very quickly. Because the people that are around them are not trigger happy maniacs, the regular sane people that are just trying to do a job. Right. So that's all I really have to say on that.
Yeah. You know, I talked to several like guys about this, and it's like, I don't think anybody like from the community would just stand around and be like, oh yeah, we're just going to smoke civilians. Okay. And they're okay with it. You know, and I've had this conversation numerous times, I think on camera and off, and it's just, it's disgusting.
No, that's a, yeah, I don't think the response would be what people would, you know, would think if somebody just started blasting civilians.
It's not.
It would be quick and aggressive.
Very much so. Like if they don't get shot, to be honest.
That's what I meant by aggressive. That's what I think it would probably be like, what the hell are you doing? There might be a bit of confusion at first because you'd be thinking like, what's going on, right?
Oh yeah, you'd be like, what the hell is he shooting at? Because you give him the benefit of the doubt, and then you look,
yeah,
and you figure it out. Yeah. Somebody would probably put him down.
I would if somebody's out there just shooting random people for no reason. I mean, I hate to say that, but I mean, if you're murdering people, I think that's a pretty justifiable reason to put somebody down.
Yeah, I agree.
It was, side note, it's a lot of these, like, if you look at what happened the other day, there was a video, and some dude got crushed by a crate, like, coming out of the sky. So these people are, like, really trying to get food, and it, and to the point where they're dying to get this food. That's just all I wanted to say about that.
No, you're not wrong, man. Right? Because, like, you'll also see it. I mean, like, everything has a purpose, which is what I think is absolutely great. Like, they'll pick up the pallets off of that. They'll take the freaking cardboard. They'll take the parachutes. They'll take the cordage or the ropes off of it and all that crap, and they'll put it to great work. Or they'll sell it in the markets. I mean, they could barter. They can trade. They can do other things to try to get, like, food from it. Or they can sell the food themselves in order to get it. You know? Lots of options. I don't think you're wrong. Oh, good. Gator's in the house. Let's see what Gator's got to say. This is always going to be interesting. Bringing you up, Gator.
Hey, what's going on, Matt?
What's up, man?
I haven't heard of a person being crushed since last year, and I think it was the UA using their quick parachutes for combat deployments.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's possible.
So, I mean, we all heard about that last year, but I don't think that I haven't heard any reports about that.
I saw a couple statements that, you know, stuff's been crushed, but I haven't really seen anything verified. But I've also been, for lack of better terms, balls deep in this and haven't been looking into those little things lately.
And so. Then. Yeah, I did have a question about did he actually, like, I think there was a guy that resigned. Did he get promoted? Like, is that confirmed that he was promoted?
Yeah, I believe he got promoted, and then I believe he ended up stepping back down afterwards.
Okay, because that's what I think sometimes there's like a power dynamic, and you know, like how it is in the military. Sometimes a power dynamic where people just are like, hey, I'm power hungry. You know, I just got promoted to this new thing. I need to do things this way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. You know? And then you also got a picture.
Just hoping you could elaborate that.
Well, I mean, position, rank that he was in, seeing other things he felt like that were wrong, but he also wasn't right on to the entirety of this situation because it wasn't his role. And so he starts making suggestions because he feels a certain way about it. But, you know, yeah, I mean, what's he going to do?
That's all I got. I wasn't expecting to come up so quickly.
No, it's fine, man. I'm going to bring up this last guy, and then honestly, I'm going to close out probably so I can get me some rack, because I desperately need it, to be honest. So who we got coming up? Keymaker? Yeah, Keymaker. What's up, brother?
Hey, I could barely, I just jumped in. I didn't understand the full topic, but I figured we were talking about that guy. So I'm just going to listen in for a little bit. I'll chime in a minute.
Okay. Yeah, I'm about to jump down. I just did an entire stream on it. Videos posted up over the channel, and then I jumped in here to take questions afterwards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's what I was going to ask.
I didn't know you did it. I didn't know you did it already. I seen your post earlier, but I was in a different space. So I'll check it out then.
Yeah. So I just released the article. Then I went over the article as I was going over it. I was adding additional commentary to some other things that are I chose not to include. So those statements are in there as well. Cool, man. Appreciate you. All right. I guess if you didn't have any, then I'll go with eyes wide. I believe it's open. Bring you in here. Get these comments rolling. What you got?
If I was wide open?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, first of all, great job. Very revealing as a civilian. You know, it was very clear to me. You know, I'm struck by the fact that I'm looking at my internet and my computer right now, how far this story was picked up, you know, by all over the world. And it's just a lie that's been repeating and flying over. The question is, how do you get this truth out there now? I mean, you've started the process, but how do we promote this finding that you have and sort of counteract all the negative stories that are out there?
Well, again, UGS, I've been working with them, making sure that, you know, I wasn't wrong in what I was doing. Also issues of, you know, people that I've talked to that have came forward to talk to me again, it's against their company policy. And so, you know, company wants information. I can't give it to them until I get other assurances in place. And same thing with IDF, right? But on top of that, the lady that wrote that article yesterday about Amir's mom, I was in contact with her. She's currently going over and reviewing stuff and is saying that she's going to be writing on this, or that's, you know, things I've heard from her. Also, you know, there's lots of people in the media that I also happen to know. And I will tell you that there's also members of the government, both in the United States and in Israel, that are aware of this as well. So
I agree.
Yeah. So this is getting reviewed. This information was just published a little bit ago. And again, I'm an independent source, independent freaking researcher that did all of this, obviously in depth, expert on the topic, and then also expert on the military. So that opinion matters. And this is something that people took very, very seriously, both here in the United States. And while I don't give a crap about clicks and views, what I will tell you is that people in both the governments are tracking on this when I released it.
Wonderful. Great job.
Thank you.
I think the truth will reveal itself on its own.
Well, right. And that's exactly why I wrote the article in which I did. It's very fact-based. I threw opinions in where I felt they were warranted from my military experience or from just my personal experience investigating this, to where my opinion actually matters, right? Like, what did I actually think after doing all of this, right? And I inserted those opinions because that's exactly how I felt and what I find to be true. That's also why I put that statement down at the very bottom of the article. Based upon the preponderance of the evidence of everything that I've gathered and that I know and believe to be true, those are my results that I published, right? Not could have been, not maybe this, not what if. This is what I know to be true. This is what I believe about these things. That's it. So that's how all that came out. All right, guys, I am going to give me some rack. Nate Vance, sir, always good to see you. Remember, you know, beer, you know?
Yeah. Yet. Absolutely.
You going to come climbing, you going to come climb before the weather turns to crap?
For the weather? We got a little while. Yeah. Yeah. I need to take care of some things first. I'll talk to you on the side.
All right. Sidebar. I love it, man. All right. Sounds good, man.
All right. Take care.
All right. I'm closing out the space. Thank you, everybody.
Later.
Bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me for another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. I hope you enjoyed this investigation because I did not enjoy the investigation, but I hope you enjoyed the results. I hope you feel a little bit better informed on the subject. If you have critiques of it, if I need to issue corrections, by all means, reach out to me. Not going anywhere. You guys know where you can find me. SpeakTheTruthPodcast@gmail.com. Over on X, Matt Tardio. Look me up. You can find me. Not that freaking hard to find. Or, you know, I don't know. Any other way. A lot of people over inside Gaza figured out how to get a hold of me. Blew my freaking mind. It's a small world, ladies and gentlemen. You can get me. Peace, love, happiness, and God bless, ladies and gents, because finally I can say I'm out of here.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.